Hey, you're tuned in to the Verve Podcast live from the heart of Las Vegas, Nevada. Thanks for listening, and viva la Verve!
In 1960, MIT meteorologist Edward Lorenz made an accidental discovery as he was developing a computer software that could simulate and forecast weather conditions. One day, he was in a hurry, and instead of entering the number 0.506127, he decided to just round the number to the nearest thousand, so 0.506. Lorenz figured that, you know, that rounding to the nearest thousand would be completely inconsequential. Left the lab. But when he returned, he found that there had been a radical change in the simulated weather conditions. Lorenz estimated that the numerical difference between the original number and the rounded number was the equivalent of the puff that a butterfly's wing might create. And he concluded that a minor event like the flapping of a butterfly's wing could conceivably alter wind currents to eventually change weather conditions thousands of miles away. And Lorenz kind of introduced to the scientific community the butterfly effect. It's defined this way. Tiny differences in input can quickly become overwhelming differences in output. Now, that's true in science, and it's often true in life, right? Small changes and small choices can become magnified over time and have major consequences in our lives. It's like everything we change changes everything. Everything we change changes everything. Too often, what we do is we fail to connect the dots in our lives, and we don't realize that the decisions we made had the consequences that they're having. But what happens is when we make a decision, it often has a domino effect that can affect our entire destiny. We've been doing this series called Lion Chasers, and it's based on a story in the Bible, a true story, kind of an obscure story about a guy named Benaiah. And Benaiah is a guy who one day decided to chase a lion. Rather than running from it, he chased the lion. He pursued it. It fell into a snowy pit. He dove in and he killed the lion. We still don't know why he chased a lion, but what we've been learning in this series is that, man, sometimes you just have to chase the lion. You know, sometimes you have to do what seems impossible. And we've been learning in this series that with God, impossible is nothing. And that when we chase the lion, what will happen in our lives is it will lead us to a place of radical dependence on God. And what we're hoping is that Verve becomes just a church full of lion chasers. Benaiah ended up climbing all the way up to the military command to become the commander-in-chief of Israel's army. And it seems that his eventual rank was the consequence of three very calculated risks he had taken earlier in his life. We've looked at these. We find them in the Bible in a book called 2 Samuel chapter 23. And what we find, these first dominoes that Benaiah tipped over, was that Benaiah took on two Moabites despite the fact that he was outnumbered. He pursued a lion despite the fact that it was, you know, snowy conditions and a 500-pound beast. And he fought an Egyptian despite the fact that he was outarmed. But what if? What if Benaiah had decided that two Moabites were too many? What if he had decided that, you know, chasing a lion was stupid and too dangerous? What if he had decided that a 7.5-foot Egyptian was too big to fight? I don't know, but I think it's safe to assume that he never would have ended up becoming the head of Israel's army. No less his original position as the head of King David's bodyguard. It was Benaiah's willingness to risk life and limb that set him apart. And lion chasers are risk takers. Even if they don't start out that way, they learn to become risk takers. They learn that what's really risky is playing it safe. They recognize that the best you can do if you run away from a lion is break even. Right? You may save your skin, but you will never have a lion skin hanging on your wall as a trophy of your conquest. What they learn is that no risk equals no reward. You know, as I look at my life, what I come to understand is that every good thing in my life is the result of a risk I took, calculated risk. Getting married was a risk. Having kids, that's a risk. Becoming a pastor was a total risk for me. I left a full scholarship at a top 20 law school to go to seminary. Starting this church was a risk. And what I've experienced is, it's like the bigger the risk, the bigger the reward. And often, the one thing keeping us from our destiny, the tipping point that will lead us to the life that we're really supposed to be living, the life that you long to live, is a risk. That first domino that you have to topple over to set the course of your life and lead to your destiny is a risk. Seriously, I'm convinced that the one thing that's probably keeping you from the life that you should be living is one small act of courage. One courageous choice may be the only thing between you and your dream becoming a reality. And it may be something as simple as making the phone call that you know you need to make, filling out that application you've been putting off, sending that email. And it's never going to happen until you push over that first domino. I think of a guy in the church that I started in Virginia Beach. I was a pastor, started a church in Virginia Beach, was there for 12 years before moving here to start Verve. A guy named Jim Fletcher. Everybody called him Fletch. Great guy. He's really authentic, passionate, growing Christ follower. He was an architect. And one day he met with me and he said, "Hey, I want to go into ministry. Like, I want to become like a pastor instead of an architect. How do I do that?" And I was like, "Man, I don't know." He had a wife and two kids, and he was kind of in the middle of his life, middle of his career. And I'm like, "Man, that's a challenge in the spot that you're in." And we had this position open at our church, and he said, "Well, can I apply for it?" I said, "You can apply for it. I don't think you'll get it." And he applied for it, and he didn't get it. And he said, "Vince, how do I become a pastor?" And I said, "You know, it's too bad that you've got a wife and kids." It's not too bad that you have a wife and kids, but it's too bad in this situation, because the perfect first step for you would to be an intern. That kind of gets your foot in the door, gives you some ministry experience, but, I mean, you can't do an internship. Interns get paid like crap, and like, you can't support your family on that. It's just too bad you can't do an internship. About a week later, I get a phone call from Fletch, and he says, "Hey, when do I start my internship?" I said, "It's too bad you can't do an internship." I didn't say to do an internship. He said, "Talk to my boss." Told him I need 6 months off. And I told him when I come, you know, after those 6 months, I might come back. If they have a job for me still, great. And if not, I would understand. When do I start my internship? I said, "All right." And at our church, like, the pastors did not get paid much at all, but the interns seriously got paid crap, like almost nothing. But somehow he and his family made it work. And kind of throughout his internship, kind of about halfway through it, we had another position open up at our church. We're hiring a new staff position, and Fletcher was doing a great job, and he seemed like a good fit for that role. We said, "Man, we can't let him go," and we hired him. And to this day, Fletcher is still doing full-time ministry. Why? Because he pushed over that first domino, right? He took that risk. That first domino set into motion the course of his entire future. It led him to his destiny. So one risk can change your life. And honestly, it can be even bigger than that. I'm no historian, but it seems to me that when you study history, you start to realize that it's often one small step, like one act of courage, one risk. You know, somebody who's willing to take a risk or take a stand, somebody who's willing to make a sacrifice that changes history, right? I mean, it's Rosa Parks saying, "No, I won't move to the back of the bus." Change history. It's Gandhi saying, "No, we won't pay the salt tax," and leading his people in a 248-mile protest march. It's Jordan Knight saying, "Okay, boys, I'll do the reunion tour." I thought you guys weren't getting that. It was like kind of a slow reaction. All right. And what happens is that one step, that one act, has this domino effect. They just start to fall. It has a butterfly effect and changes the course of history. So for Benaiah, the tipping point was chasing a lion into a pit on a snowy day and killing it. He just took that first small step towards the lion. And it was just a step like many steps he had taken before. It was probably a small step. But I'll tell you this, and you know this, it was the scariest step of his life, right? I mean, it was counterintuitive. It was illogical. It was scary. But he took it. He took it. And that one small step in the direction of the lion turned out to be a giant leap toward his destiny, and it set the course for the rest of his life. Now, there is nothing easy about taking risks. There's nothing easy about it. Even what might seem like a small risk to others, for us, can feel as scary as chasing a lion or facing, you know, a giant Egyptian in hand-to-hand combat. But lion chasers have the courage to overcome inaction inertia. You know, they just get to a place, and they may not start out this way, you may not start out this way, but you can get to this place where their fear of missing out is greater than their fear of messing up. You know what I mean? They're willing to take this up because my fear of missing out on my destiny is greater than my fear of messing up what I'm doing. And listen, I'm not sure what step God has called you to take. I'm not sure what lion God has called you to chase. For you, it may mean teaching or tutoring at an inner city school. It may be starting a business. It might be becoming a foster parent. Maybe for you, it's ending a relationship or fully committing yourself to stay in your marriage. It may be starting a graduate program at school or resigning from your position at work. Maybe for you, the lion that God wants you to chase is to become a generous person. It's interesting. If you read the Bible, I think you can make a very good case that us becoming generous people is more important to God than probably anything else. You can make that case because God talks more about us becoming generous than he talks about anything else in the Bible. And I'll tell you this, that's something I had to learn because being a generous person did not come naturally to me. And maybe it's the same for you. Maybe you need to kind of take that first step and push over that first domino that will help lead you to become generous. And we've got kind of an amazing opportunity to help you with this, to kind of take that first step. So back in April, we announced that we were starting this new initiative called Splagna. And Splagna is a church planting movement to help start new churches in the most sinful places and for the most cynical people in America and around the world. And I'll tell you this, making that announcement was kind of pushing over that first domino. Like I stood at a conference where I was speaking at, and there was, I think, 7,000 people there or something like that. 5,000 people, I don't know, I didn't count. But there was a lot of people, and I said, we're doing this. We're starting this thing, and I told you guys, and we put it out on the internet, and it totally felt scary. Because, like, what if we announce it and nothing ever happens? And people go, hey, whatever happened with that Splagna thing? And we're like, yeah, nothing. So it was like, man, we're fools, but we're going to go for this. And we push over that first domino. What's happened is the response has actually been overwhelming. And so we've got some really cool things in the works that you'll hear about eventually. But right now, we have an opportunity to start our first church in India, in a city called and I struggle with this city, Siliguri. So Siliguri is one of the darkest places on earth. It's one of the kind of the capitals of sex trafficking in the world. In fact, it's considered the sex trafficking gateway to the rest of the world. So like the International Justice Mission has studied sex trafficking, and what they've discovered is that almost every person who's taken and forced into sex slavery at some point is in Siliguri. Like, at some point, their journey goes through Siliguri. It's the gateway to the rest of the world for sex trafficking. It's a bad place. So there is a ministry called the Central India Christian Mission. I told you about those guys like a month ago. And they do an amazing job starting churches all over India. In fact, last year they started 240 churches in India. The one place they haven't started a church is Siliguri. seems too difficult, too challenging, too dark there. But what they did do is they started a daycare center, and it's a really cool thing because they started it right in the red light district, right in the midst of all the brothels. The reason they did this is because they discovered what happens with the kids of the prostitutes in these brothels. These girls are forced into prostitution, and when they have babies, the children are all taken, and they're put in a little room, pitch black, no windows. They're given a glass of water and a biscuit for the day. They have to be in there all day by themselves with a glass of water and a biscuit. And they're taught and even forced to huff gasoline because it will keep them from feeling hunger pains, and it will keep them from crying and kind of disturbing the rest of the house. Some of you are like, what is huffing gasoline? Some of you know because you have huffed a lot of nitrous oxide from whipped cream containers. And some of you are like, oh no, I know what you're talking about. Yeah, I know who you are. And maybe me too. So what they've done is they started this daycare center to get the girls out of that condition and the kids, and take care of the kids in a place where they can be safe and fed and not become drug addicts at 2 years old. And so they started this daycare center, and when they heard about what we were doing, they said, hey, like, would you help us? Because this is one of those most sinful places, and we would love to start a church here. And we said yes. And so we're going to help with, like, training the guys starting the church, stuff like that. But we also made a financial commitment. Now, here's the crazy thing. To start a church in India costs $3,000 in startup funds, and the pastor's salary will be $300 a month. Like in India, that's what you can exist on. And so it's not a ton of money, but we committed. We will give the $3,000. I'm going to ask you to consider maybe helping with that so that we don't have to take it all of our checking account. But there's some more that we can do. So we've been talking to them. And if we raise more than that, like if we raise $7,000 instead of just three, then we could also bring this church planter and another church planter in India to America. We do a conference every year in October. We have pastors come from all over the world, mostly America, and we kind of coach them in how to start a church, and we could bring like two guys over for that conference. If we raise $10,000, we could start the church, bring these two guys over, and help to expand the daycare center so that there's more kids coming in, take even better care of them, which would be really good to get more kids out of those horrible conditions. If we can raise 20, an additional 10 over that, then there's a couple options. One of them is that they could probably start a school for the kids instead of just having a daycare, so those kids could get educated and maybe have a chance at a better life. Another option is that they found that they have chances to buy the girls out of prostitution. And so there's been several chances along the way where it's like the pimp of the house will let a girl go if they'll pay. And a lot of times this ministry doesn't have the money to pay. And so we could start a fund to rescue women out of sex slavery. And so I'm going to give to this. I'm going to give over and above what I already give, which is a tithe and more. I'm going to give more than that. And I want to encourage you and challenge you guys to do this as well so that we can really make a difference in Siliguri, India. So here's what you can do. If you want, between now and September 1st, you could write a check and in the memo line write India Mission or India Church Plant. Okay, or it's probably easier if you go online at our website or to our new Verve app. You can download the Verve app by looking for Verve Church in the App Store. You can give online to this, and when you give to Verve, there's a little drop-down menu. It says, yes, I want to give, and then it says, what do you want to give to? And it says, offerings, some other options. There's now an option that says, India Church Plant. So you just click on there, and that offering, whatever amount you give, will go straight to that ministry and to what we're doing there. I want to ask you to do me a favor. If you decide to do this, and there's no pressure, it's totally up to you, but if you decide to do this, do it over and above whatever you normally give to Verve, because we need the money you normally give to Verve. Like, our offerings honestly don't begin to cover our expenses, and so if everybody says, oh, I'm going to give to that instead of Verve, then, you know, my family's not going to eat for a month, you're going to see my kids and feel bad, and it'll be your fault. So, I'm just kidding, but if you could give above whatever you give, or maybe for some of you, you're like, I don't give, I've never really given, and maybe you can go, huh, this could be like a first step for me towards generosity, towards experiencing the joy of giving, realizing, man, my money, instead of going to me getting another Starbucks or another whatever, is like rescuing a kid out of having to huff gasoline all day so it doesn't cry. Like that would be a really cool thing, okay? So I'm going to do it. I hope some of you will do it. We don't, if you come here a lot, you know we don't ask for money. Like, all you ever hear is, please don't give, please don't give. So, but this would be a really cool thing, all right? Listen, I don't know the line that God has called you to chase, okay? It may mean starting a new career. It might mean staying in your marriage. It might mean becoming a generous person. Here's what I do know. You cannot remove risk from the equation. You can't. Whatever it is, there's going to be risk. And because there's risk, there's going to be fear. Okay? You're going to experience fear. And so here's what we need to do. We need to become people who are fear of missing out is greater than our fear of messing up. What we realize, this could get messy, this could be difficult, but I just don't want to miss out on what God has for me. There's a great story in the Bible that illustrates this that I want to show to you. If you have a Bible with you, you can turn to Matthew chapter 14. Matthew chapter 14. If you don't have a Bible, that's totally fine. We put the verses on the screen for you. If you don't own a Bible, I would love for you to own one. So we give them out as a free gift at the Velcro Bar, which is our connecting place. You can just grab a Bible on your way out. There's no trick, no catch, no cost. So here's the context. It's like the middle of the night, and Jesus' original followers, there's 12 of them, they're sometimes called the disciples, they're in a boat, and they're rowing across the Sea of Galilee, which is a massive sea. Don't picture like a little pond, it's a big sea. And a huge storm comes up, and I'm talking like big winds, big waves, and they are in trouble out there on the water. And then something really strange happens. So starting in verse 25 on the screen, it says, shortly before dawn, so still pretty pitch black, Jesus went out to them walking on the lake. Okay, so Jesus comes walking on water up to them. When the disciples saw him walking on the lake, they were terrified. It's a ghost, they said, and cried out in fear. So they have like a Scooby-Doo moment right here, right? They're like, and like, they're like, it's a ghost, and they're freaking out. All right, so, and then it says, but Jesus immediately said to them, take courage, it is I. Don't be afraid. Lord, if it's you, Peter, who's one of the 12 disciples, replied, tell me to come to you on the water. Come, he said. Then Peter got down out of the boat, walked on the water. He walked on the water and came toward Jesus. But when he saw the wind, he was afraid. And beginning to sink, cried out, Lord, save me. Immediately, Jesus reached out his hand and caught him. You have little faith, he said. Why did you doubt? And when they climbed into the boat, the wind died down. Then those who were in the boat worshiped him, saying, truly, you are the Son of God. So you picture that the disciples are in the boat. Jesus comes walking up. They think he's a ghost when he speaks, right? He says, take courage. It is I. Do not be afraid. For some reason, my Jesus sounds like Antonio Banderas. I don't know how that happens. I got problems. And so he says, don't be afraid. And Peter says, whoa, if it's you, and who knows why he said this? Who knows why Benaiah chased the lion? But Peter says, if it's you, tell me to walk on water to you. And Jesus looks at him and says, get to stepping, brother, and calls him out, right? And Peter, I'm sure, very cautiously does one of these. And then he does one of these, and he's standing on water, okay? The Bible understands this is weird, okay? This is not everyday stuff, right? And he takes a step, and he's like staring at Jesus, and he's walking on water, like looking into Jesus' eyes, smiling at Jesus, when he kind of takes his eyes off of Jesus and he starts looking around and he notices the waves. The Bible says he saw the wind, which is interesting. You can't see wind, but I mean, his mind just starts getting overtaken by what's going on around him. And so he's no longer paying attention to what's actually right in front of him, which is Jesus. He's looking at everything else and he starts to drown. He's like, oh, but Jesus. That's, get it? Yeah, I'm filling with water. And Jesus reaches out his hand and he helps him. So here's the deal. When you take a risk, okay, not Peter, when you take a risk, when you take a step of faith, you are always going to second guess yourself. You will always second guess yourself. Okay, it happens with everyone. When you get out of the boat, whatever it is for you, whether it's changing careers ending a relationship or starting to serve in a ministry, you're going to have second thoughts. You're going to wonder, did I make a mistake coming out here? You know, you're going to ask, did God really tell me to get out of the boat, or was I just kind of having a weird moment? But because there are going to be times when, instead of walking on water, you find yourself sinking in it. And when that happens, when you find yourself having second thoughts and having regrets and you're sinking in the water, you're going to have regrets about the decision you made, right? You're going to have regrets. Why did I get out of the boat? Always. Any risk you take, you're going to have second thoughts, okay? So like with me, I mentioned some risks I've taken in my life earlier, like getting married. That's a risk. With me and my wife in our marriage, are we always walking on water? No. Sometimes we are sinking in it. And when we're sinking, do I have regrets? Do I have thoughts like, why did I want to get married in the first place? Yes, I do. Yes, I do. Or having kids. Are we always just walking on water? No. Sometimes we're sinking in it. And when we're sinking in it, do I have thoughts like, what made me think I wanted to have kids? Yes, I do. Yes. Or becoming a pastor and starting this church. You know, do I sometimes feel like I'm drowning? Yes. And when that happens, do I have regrets? Do I ask questions like, you know, man, if I had just stayed in law school, I'd be making so much more money. My life would be so much easier. Or why in the world did I start this church? Or why do I have to put up with all these people? God, they're idiots. I call you idiots sometimes. I'm just being honest. Do I have thoughts like that? Yes, I do. Yes, I do. Okay? See, when you take a risk, when you get out of the boat, you will always have second thoughts and regrets. But, now listen, this is a really important part, okay? The regrets you experience for taking those risks are much smaller than the regrets you would have for not taking those risks. Does that make sense? So like, do I have regrets in my marriage and becoming a parent? Yes. But would I have much greater regrets if I hadn't married my wife and had my kids? To quote the Kool-Aid man, oh yeah. Totally, right? Do I have regrets about becoming a pastor and starting church? Yes. But would I have much greater regrets if I didn't become a pastor and start a church? Yes, much greater regrets. See, the deal is, when you take a risk, it's not always going to be perfect. It's not going to always be a walk on the water, but it's still better than not taking those risks, like with Peter. You know, it's interesting, when people talk about this story, they kind of like are negative on Peter. But I think Peter gets kind of a bum rap. You know, it's really easy to criticize Peter from the comfortable confines of the boat. You know, to look out in the water and say, look at him. Didn't have that much faith, did he? Look, he's drowning now. You know, Jesus had to save him. But here's what I think. There are always going to be people who are sitting in the boat criticizing the water walkers. But what I think is that sinking is always better than sitting. Sinking is better than sitting. I would rather get all wet than have my butt fall asleep in the boat. You know? And I think that our greatest regrets are going to be the God-ordained risks that we didn't take. We're not going to regret so much sinking. We'll regret sitting. It's so easy to criticize water walkers from the boat, but I think that the other 11 disciples were probably haunted for the rest of their lives that they missed their opportunity to walk on water. I mean, they could have done it too, right? Peter starts taking those steps. They all could have went, let's go, right? You know, they could have like played some like 6-on-6 football out there on the sea. You know, you could just picture them like running down the sidelines, splish, splash, splish, splash. It would have been awesome, right? But you know what they did? They just watched. Maybe they criticized him, you know? I bet Peter had some regrets about what happened. He regretted that he took his eyes off Jesus, regretted that he looked at the wind and the waves, regretted that he started to sink. He had regrets about what happened after he got out of the boat, but I bet his regrets were nothing compared to the regrets the other guys had because they didn't get out of the boat, because they missed their one chance to walk on water. See, there are, let me say it this way, there are regrets of action and there are regrets of inaction, right? A regret of action is doing something and then later wishing I hadn't done it, right? A regret of inaction is not doing something and wishing later that I had done it. And like you, I have my fair share of action regrets. Starting to drink heavily and do drugs in middle school. Getting arrested when I was 15. Shooting a BB into Adam Opplinger's butt. Long story. We all have things that we have done and things that we have said that we later regret. But still, I think our deepest regrets are going to be the things we didn't do, the missed opportunities. You know, action regrets taste bad, but inaction regrets leave like this bitter aftertaste that can last a lifetime. Inaction regrets haunt us because they always leave us asking, what if? What if I had done it? What if I had gone for it? What would my life be like? Inaction regrets leave you feeling like there's like this puzzle that makes up your life and you have this missing piece of your jigsaw puzzle. And you always wonder, what would the picture look like if I had just done it, right? If you're anything like me, you already have maybe a fair share of missing pieces in your puzzle. You know, regrets of actions that you didn't take. And so the question becomes, well, what do you do with them? What do I do with the fact that I've already not done some things and I already have regrets? You've got options. You can wallow in self-pity. You can beat yourself up for the rest of your life. It's an option. You can just choose to kind of drown in your regret. It's an option. Or you can channel those regrets into a more courageous approach to life. Right? You can resolve that next time I will chase the lion, whatever it is. I'm going to fight for my second marriage. I'm going to reapply for that program. I'm going to go back to school. I'm going to try out for American Idol next season, whatever it is. I love what Henry David Thoreau said about regrets. This is really good. He wrote, yes, make the most of your regrets. Never smother your sorrow, but tend and cherish it till it comes to have a separate and integral interest. To regret deeply is to live afresh. And so the idea is, let the fact that you already have regrets turn you into a risk taker for the rest of your life because you don't want to collect any more. You know how that feels. You know what that tastes like. And so use your regrets to turn you into a risk taker, to push over that first domino. Just push it over. So here's the cool thing, and this is really good. When you take that risk, okay, you decide, all right, I'm going to go for it, and you step out of the boat. Yes, you will be hit by the wind and the waves. And yes, there are going to be moments when you start to sink. It will happen. But when you look up, what you're going to realize is that you are out there in that scary place with Jesus, right? And the other people, they're not out there with Jesus. They're sitting comfortably in the boat watching people who take risks of faith and are out there with Jesus. You're the one who's actually out there with Jesus. And as you find yourself sinking, if you look up and you look into his eyes again, I think you'll find yourself regaining your footing. And at those moments when you just can't, when you're like, man, I've tried it and I just can't seem to find the ability to walk, what you'll find is Jesus reaching out to you. See, taking the risk, getting out of the boat means walking out into the storm, right? And so what it takes is faith. It takes faith. And when the waves start crashing, what it does is it requires us to have a relationship with Jesus because we realize if I don't get help, I will drown. Whatever it is for you, right? If my marriage doesn't get help, we're done. If I don't get help with this addiction I have, I'm done. And so when you're out in that storm and you realize, man, if I don't get Jesus' help, I'm going to drown. And so it puts you in a place where you absolutely need to live in that relationship with Jesus. And isn't that where we want to be? I don't know about you, but that's where I want to live my life, in a place where I need Jesus. And so instead of being bored in the boat, we need to just learn to look for and find the eyes of Jesus and fix our eyes on His. Because when we do, we get to walk on water. We get to walk on water. And some of you need to take that first step today. You need to, whatever it is, you need to push over that first domino and see what the butterfly effect might be, how it leads you to your destiny. And I want to tell you this, listen, you can do that. You might feel like you can't do that, but you can do that. And so do it. Others of you might be in a different place. You might be like, no, I took the risk. I got out of the boat. The problem is I'm in the storm, you know? And whatever the risk was for you, getting married, having kids, the new career, trying to do something great for God, you took the risk. You got out of the boat, and now you're experiencing the wind, and you're experiencing the waves, and you're starting to feel those regrets of the decision that you made. And what you need to do is you need to look up, and you need to find Jesus' eyes again.